So I'm going to be talking about the Army's approach to stability operations, but you might want to think about this as an intervention, because that's sort of how I think about it. And that course that Tom mentioned is our intervention, and we use that along with some policy tools to change the way that we engage in support of our stability operations task. I have no relationships to disclose. My disclaimer, the views are my own. I do not represent official policy or position of the U.S. government, the Department of Defense, Defense Health Agency, or the Uniformed Services University. The clearances made me put everything in there. So everyone that I'm attached to, I do not represent them, even though I'm in uniform, of course. So the objectives. I want to describe how the Department of Defense veterinary activities and engagements have transitioned over from a service delivery model, so a treatment model, to a capacity building model, and then explain how animal health is a key component to a global health security strategy. Now to meet these objectives, I want to answer four questions with you. So why did we make this transition? And what did we transition from? How did we make that transition? And then what was that new approach? So hopefully by the end of this, you'll be able to answer all those four questions. So why did we do it? Because we were told to. In 2006, a policy was published that said the Army will conduct stability operations. Under stability operations, there were several other smaller tasks or subtasks, and the ones that we found most relevant for this particular mission as applied to the veterinary capability were restore essential services and support economic and infrastructure development. Notice health is not in these tasks, so I'm going to have to link this to our health security strategy somewhere along the line. So when I talk about what we used to do, I'm going to give you a short video just to give you a frame of reference of what that looked like.
United States service members from the Utah National Guard and members of the Moroccan Royal Armed Forces provided veterinary services as part of the Mission African Lion 2011. The services were part of Humanitarian and Civic Assistance, or HCA, which took place Monday through Friday, May 23rd through 27th, each day in a different Moroccan village. Among the animals were donkeys, cows, and lots of sheep and goats. The free services, deworming, and vaccination helped many local farmers.
It costs about $1 an animal to vaccinate and deworm, and they can't afford it, so we're providing the service for them. I've had a great time killing over here. Working with those Moroccans.
Overall, the veterinary portion of the HCA cared for more than 3,500 animals. Reporting from Agadir, Morocco, I'm Specialist Chloe Barnes.
So that was a very common, and it's the predominant model that veterinary services was engaged in for most of the post-Vietnam era up until just recently. This quote, it costs about $1 an animal to vaccinate and deworm, and they can't afford it, so we're providing the service. I want y'all to keep that in mind as I go through the next couple slides. So at the end of one of these missions, this is what gets basically presented up the chain of command. It shows you where we were. It shows you some action items, so an Army Veterinary Service officer deworming a goat. It shows you the numbers of animals that we treated, and then it gives you a couple little tidbits of information in the lower right. Typically, the issues are encountered have to do with if we had gotten more X, we would have been able to treat more Y. So it's all related to this number right here. That's what the commanders want to see, and that's what we needed to really re-educate. Now, just to give the counterfactual to that mission, which was, of course, considered a success, let's look at an NGO working on a community animal health worker program in the same location. So on the left, we see the accomplishments. 75% of the community animal health workers are doing great work. They're sustaining on their fee-for-service, so that dollar an animal, they're able to charge that to our farmers and herders, and that is maintaining or sustaining the animal health system. Now look over to the right. In four districts, 95% of the animals were vaccinated and dewormed for free. Our community animal health workers that we just trained and equipped and sent out to go and practice their craft have no animals to exchange that fee for service, so they're going to remain unemployed for the next year. Now, this hypothetical situation or this hypothetical example is based on real world events, and the people have been, I'm not naming names just so that we can protect the identities of those. So, why is this happening? my theory is that if you have a hammer, then everything looks like a nail. So what do I mean by if you have a hammer? If you look on the left, those are the ABMA Council on Education credentialing requirements. That's what schools of veterinary medicine are credentialed on. So those are the competencies that an Army veterinarian comes out of vet school being able to do. That's what we expect. And that's our entry-level veterinary corps officer. So the people who are going out to do these missions, that's the skill set that they're bringing to the table. And prior to 2010, they didn't get any additional skills related to doing work overseas. Now, if you look on the right, that's the World Organization for Animal Health competencies for the entry-level veterinary practitioner. You'll see there's a mismatch. It's a much more balanced set of competencies between clinical practice, veterinary preventive medicine, public health, and this global animal health system. Whereas on the left-hand side, you see it's very heavy on clinical practice and public health. So just to give you a little background, whenever you send a veterinary corps officer overseas to do this type of work, they're given very little guidance. So of course, they fall back on what they know, which is clinical medicine. So this is our capability. That's what veterinary corps officers can do. And this is the requirement. So there's a mismatch there. So our intervention looked at these competencies in the middle. So we tried to build these. These were actually built before the OIE competencies came to the table, so there isn't a direct correlation between those two, but at least they're lumped into the same domains. And so this is how we basically bridge that gap between the clinical practitioner and the global veterinary practitioner. But if you look down at the bottom, those are our public health competencies, so those are the things that we sort of integrated in there as well. So this intercultural communication, program planning, designing interventions, and using assessment methodologies to actually identify needs and gaps, that's the stuff that we actually really need to put in there so you can transition the skills that you have and transfer that knowledge and skill to a partner. So Rand Arroyo Center, this was before I got there, actually did a study that validates the findings that we had. And if you notice down here, there was incomplete training for military veterinarians in stability operations. If you look at the third action item, there's also incomplete training for commanders at all echelons. So not only did we not really know what we were doing, but the people we worked for didn't know what we were supposed to be doing. So that's a recipe for disaster. So we undertook the responsibility of at least our own training, and that's where we started. So if I had more time, I would actually recap what we just talked about, because I know that was a lot, but as we go through, I'll just say that was the ride that I took into the center of DRC. It was very, very, very nice ride. So I'll show all of the avenues that I get into really austere locations. Now we all recognize this. This is how I'm going to tie to health security. We're all familiar with this particular framework. It's a balance of human, animal, and environmental health that gives you a secure or a health secure population. It's the approach that we want to take, but it's a little bit incomplete. And I'll talk about the incompleteness whenever I bring up the global health security agenda. So one of the main goals of the global health security agenda is to employ an interconnected global network that can respond effectively to limit the spread of infectious disease outbreaks in humans and animals, mitigate human suffering and the loss of human life, and reduce economic impact. I was very excited to see that added in there because that's our avenue in from an Army Veterinary Services perspective. So that support economic and infrastructure development, that's where we actually are input into that system and into that framework. So how do we build a framework with economics in there? Before I get there, the approach we're taking is instead of just thinking about that activity you're doing on the ground, one of the things we want to do is think outside of your activity. So we have two sectors that are, I don't want to say competing, but they're competing. We have agriculture and health that are sort of around this one health framework. We have securities and insecurities, and we're going to talk about economic, food, health, and environmental security. And then we have stovepipes and unintended consequences. So I'm going to use a framework that helps to walk through some of these interdependent systems. So you recognize One Health is in the right-hand side of this framework. You have human, animal, and the environment. We added a fourth domain, which is the economy on the left. that sets up a nice quadrant system with several different interfaces. So you have the human-animal interface in the bottom right, the human environment in the top left, the economy animal in the lower left, and so on. Now we also overlay the sectors of health, which are on the right, and agriculture on the left, and then put those securities that I was talking about in the different sectors. So in the lower right hand, the human-animal interface, that's your human security, or your food security and health security. Now, in the center, we have that animal-environment interface, and what we're looking at there is we're noticing that at the animal-environment interface, that's where crops are grown, livestock are hunted, and wildlife are grazed. So we're calling that a livelihood interface. So in low and lower middle-income economies, people are connected to their economy through this animal-environment interface. Okay, so that was a lot. I'll let y'all digest it. And whenever they drop you in the middle of the desert in northern Kidal or in northern Mali, this is what comes to get you. That's a C-130 coming to land in a dry lake bed. Air Force are good people. So I'm going to walk you through just some examples. Now this is a H5N6 flu virus. It hasn't actually made the jump into people yet. So this is a transboundary animal disease, and a lot of ducks have died. So that's going to impact in that lower left economy or lower left quadrant, and it's going to impact your economic security and food security, because a transboundary disease, you call 800,000 animals, people don't have as much food and don't have as much income to buy food. But so lost income, lost protein. But it bleeds over into this right-hand quadrant, and it impacts health security through protein, energy, malnutrition. So that's one that enters this framework from the economy-animal interface, so transboundary animal disease, and it shows that health security output or outcome. And that shows where health and ag are both important. And then 800,000 dead ducks could potentially contaminate the environment too. So now, it's made the jump to zoonotic disease. This is different. So this is going to be coming in through that human-animal interface, and the interventions are going to be happening right here. So it's a zoonotic disease. You can call all those animals and get a health protection from that. But you get a decreased income and decreased food, which bleeds back over into a health security threat. So to protect health, we called all these animals, but that ended up having a food security and health security threat in addition to the zoonotic disease threat. So this, if you can see, it allows us to think outside of the specific activity and see who else is actually operating in the environment that we might need to be talking to. So this is why health and agriculture really need to speak together. So it's not just intervention from disease. We might want to do something good for the population. So let's improve livestock production. That's going to give us some increased income, increased wealth, and increased food security. And that's going to improve nutrition. So these are positive health outcomes. But what if it's not done in a sustainable fashion? Well, we can get overgrazing and desertification. And then some environmental contamination. So you see how it comes all the way back, and this actually is a potential health threat if you're not doing it in a sustainable fashion. So this is South Sudan. I wasn't actually there, but I like the picture. This is a government initiated vaccination campaign that's about to kick off that we were involved with. So one of the times, if it's supporting a government service, that VetCap model that I showed can be very relevant and helpful. So what has come out of this? A responsibility was codified in our policy in 2013. So we now have the responsibility as Army Veterinary Services to plan and conduct agricultural, veterinary, public health, and animal health activities. And that's starting to sort of bubble up into a couple of different roles. And that's a role as a technical advisor and a field operator. So we're advising strategists, planners, programs with our veterinary capability but we also want people to go out and implement these projects in a sustainable fashion, coordinated with our other partners, and in a capacity building fashion when possible. So this could take a number of different avenues. But I'm going to give one example that's sort of along the lines of this tripartite guidance by the World Health Organization, Food and Agriculture Organization of the UN, and the OIE. So essentially, they have a guide to establishing collaboration between the animal and human health sectors at the country level. We conducted an activity in Uganda that meant to meet that particular goal and objective.
A partnership in the East African country of Uganda is making an impact on the health and welfare of the Ugandan people, while decreasing the potential for a worldwide epidemic. U.S. and Ugandan entities have come together under the One Health program to educate village healthcare teams on disease recognition and prevention.
We're almost putting the weight of the world on their shoulders, that if we can stop disease outbreak here, then we're going to prevent a whole lot of other people from dying further on down the line.
One Health unites Ugandan human healthcare workers with veterinarians and environmental specialists as part of a holistic or circle of life approach to diagnosing and treating future diseases.
Most of the diseases that are occurring these days that actually kill masses of people are coming from animals. So the resonance where they, this combination where they all come together is because these things interrelate. Like for one, I eat the meat, I get the worm. I go to open defecation, I put it to the soil. The animal eats it back. Like it's a cycle.
The program was coordinated between the Ugandan and U.S. governments and funded by the U.S. Agency for International Development.
The USAID Corps to see that capacity for responding to diseases is not as well as the local partners, universities, district leadership, and the key potentials working in the village are working together in this issue.
The partnership between the U.S. military and Uganda People's Defense Force is also a crucial part of this initiative.
One Health is a good concept that we need really to take on and advance because the time is now that we should all come together, work to address problems affecting our community. Together, we can.
In a country striving to make huge gains in security and safety for its people, the effort here at One Health in Uganda may seem like a drop in the bucket, but for the people and animals being cared for under this program, it's a tidal wave for a brighter future. Reporting for Combined Joint Task Force Horn of Africa Public Affairs, I'm Tech Sergeant John Ledoux.
Now, it wasn't perfect, but hearing a PAO on Armed Forces Network say One Health was a big deal. So this is one of those things where we're trying to change the way that we're doing activities, and it's an iterative process. It's getting better. That wasn't by any means perfect, but it is a step in the right direction. So that shows you sort of what we started with that direct service, treat as many animals as you can, to more, okay, how do we improve the collaboration between the human and animal sector to try and prevent pandemics? Like I said, that's only one example of how that framework and how the activities that we teach or the skills that we teach can manifest through a project. There's several other examples that we can show, but that was one that I thought was relevant for this particular audience. So why did we make a transition? Because they told us to. I'm giving you the test answers right now. The transition from a service delivery model, or VetCap. We developed and provided training, so that was our intervention. And the outcome is more capacity building activities that are thinking beyond what we're doing on the ground. So, any questions?